Hello and welcome everyone. Thanks for joining our February Destiny Unveiled community conversation. It's nice to be back with you. I'm Viviana Sinclair and I'm here with my partner Elia Rael. Welcome, Elia.
Well, thank you, Viviana. And I'm really happy to be here with everyone again. It's been probably about 30 days since our last call, and I'm sure we've got a lot we could share about what's happened in those 30 days.
Yeah, so, yeah, it has been an intense time. I don't know if the rest of you have felt the intensity of the trials of Epiphany this year since our last conversation, but I certainly have. This year, January, has started off with some pretty intense planetary aspects that may challenge all of us to develop new inner resources to really draw forth from the depths of our being to meet the changes that are being asked of us now. It's not been an easy time for me, but some of these challenges are transiting my natal sun and Mercury in my birth chart. So I think that's part of it for me. So last call and the last conversation we had, we talked about the experience of the 40 days between Epiphany, which occurs on January 6th, which is the last day of the Holy Nights of Christmas. This time frame, 40 days from Epiphany to St. Valentine's Day, as the season when we're challenged to learn to love in spite of all the painful tragedies in our lives and in the world. And every year during Advent, I personally feel this possibility of a blessedness and a kind of opportunity to return to a state of purity. It just seems so virginal, the atmosphere. And there's just an inner promise that I feel myself. And also every year at Epiphany, and I'd like to hear from some of you about this, during this time frame between Epiphany to Valentine's Day, which we're in right now, I feel the challenges that face me with whatever I haven't dealt with before through Advent and the Holy Nights. And these are just opportunities, I feel, to meet and transform that which might be in the way of the light prevailing in our souls. That's how I choose to view it anyway. So it's a very opportune time. There's a lot of opportunity now, I feel, and also challenges afront. And I'm not an astrologer or an astrosopher, but I like to keep up with the cosmic happenings as a context for researching my own soul experiences, and for that which I observe going on in the world and in other people's lives too. It just really helps me create a context, and I always look at it with a questioning to see, okay, now how does this make sense? And I will share some of those cosmic events toward the end of this call if it's of interest to people, and we're going to, you know, move forward more in line with our topic today, but I'd like to bring some of that up later. And then I'd also like to mention that Bibi, who is on the call with us tonight, emailed me and let me know that it's the feast day of Saint Brigitte of Ireland today, February 1st. So she's quite a figure that I didn't know about until Bibi shared that with me. I read her biography, and she performed many spontaneous healings and what people would call miracles. And she also had just a generosity of spirit and continuously strove to heal the divide between those who had plenty of money and those who had very little, and her generosity was just really quite moving. And I asked Bibi if she would share more about St. Brigitte tonight, and so we can honor her spirit and her festival day today, and we'll do that a little bit later, Bibi. So we'll look forward to hearing from you on that. So, Eliah, would you share a quote that I chose from Corinthians to set the tone for our themes tonight? And then I'd love to hear some of your research to bring us current with where we left off in our last conversation.
Sure. Behold, I show you a mystery. We shall not all sleep. We shall all be changed. So for myself, when we left off with our call somewhere in the Holy Nights between December 25th and January 6th, I think it was January 4th thereabouts, I've still been myself living into that whole mood of the Christmas conference. And because for myself inwardly, I live with just the phrase, the founding of the new mysteries. And so every year I do read the triptych cycle, starting with mystery knowledge and mystery centers, then world history in the light of anthroposophy, and of course the last one, which we really didn't delve into very deeply, Rosicrucianism in modern initiation. And I'm realizing more and more that what Rudolf Steiner did was he created this bridge from the present all the way to the past. And in a sense, he wove a little bit of the other two lectures into each lecture. And then when we come to the last one, Rosicrucianism and modern initiation, it's like, it's as if the door to the spiritual world was wide open. And there's something that's in there that really was, I really believe, was flowing through Rudolf Steiner. And the lectures in there are so intimate, I can read one lecture three or four times, and then I want to go back and read it again. And it's just the way he treated the material. Some of it is just extremely intimate. It's as if there's a fire blazing in a room and the men and the women are around him, and he's just sharing out of his own clairvoyant experiences right there in the room. So there's some particular things I like to share from that, and I don't know, Viviana, should I continue with that now, or should we bring that up a little bit later?
No, this is a good time. That's what will open the thoughts for the rest of the conversation, so go ahead.
Yeah, all right. Well, he introduced something that he called reading into the astral light. And he said that it really occurred, he really was describing what initiation consciousness might have been like, let's say, in the Persian cultural epic. And for those of you that don't necessarily know what that means, at least in a timeline, it's about 6 to 8,000 BC. And he's saying that in that time period, that the initiate would experience clairvoyant consciousness in such a way that he wanted himself to draw out of what was in his own soul life and imprint it, literally, with organs of perception, right spiritually into the astral light. And he said we could do that then, or the initiate and their pupils could do that then, because of the earth offering resistance. And then he moves us forward into Egypt. And he said the Egyptian initiates could do that, but now it was the watery element that offered resistance. And then he moves us into the Greek period. And he said it was now the air that offered resistance. And that's why we often hear about the Greek gods and goddesses appearing in the air. And then he brings us up into the time of the Rosicrucians. And at first it was somewhat like a tragedy where they weren't able to. They didn't know how to write into the astral light because with the three past ages and the ability to do it, it was now gone. In fact, he says that if they followed their inner inspirations out, he says some amazing things. He says it went out to the ends of space. And he said there it entered the spiritual world. But they still weren't able to write into it. And he said that Christian Rosenkreutz himself was able to, in somewhat of a dream state, in a clairvoyant state, follow the inner inspirations out into where space ends, and he found a way through the entry into the spiritual world to write into the astral light.
Can you, would you be willing to share, because I'm imagining some people on this call, and me included, actually, I'd just like to have a better idea of what that means, writing into the astral light. I'm not really sure what that means, because I think, don't we all do that, whether we're conscious of it or not, in ordinary lifetime?
Well, again, I prefaced it by the fact that it was the initiates that had learned how to do this. And obviously, the writing occurs, and Rudolf Steiner says this directly, from spiritual organs, that we write with spiritual organs. So there are organs, you know, we have these seven spiritual sense centers within us that, again, are waiting to be unfolded or spiritualized. So obviously Rudolf Steiner is already possessing this when he's sharing this out. But he's literally asking the people in the room, though, that they in turn should start to be able to read into the astral light. And they reflect back, and he says, and he's saying to them directly that they should be able to do this. Why? He says, because they are the ones that wrote into the astral light themselves when they were incarnated in Persia, and they were incarnated in Egypt, and they were incarnated in Greece, all the way up to the time of the Middle Ages. But he says it's incumbent upon us in the present to be able to write into the astral light. Did that help at all? I know it's hard to, it's really a hard thing to comprehend because, you know, reading it, we really don't have the experience of what he's talking about. We can imagine it.
Is that the same as the Akasha records, that you're this astral light, the reading in the astral light?
Yeah, because he says what's out there is this fine astrality that's in the Akasha. So he says, think of it like, and he gives the example of a chalkboard, that one always needs resistance to write on it. And that resistance early on was the earth itself offered the resistance.
So I think maybe, I don't know, my imagination of what you're saying is that we all do write into the astral light, but it's a matter of being conscious about it, because I know in other lectures too, he talks about the gods, the spiritual beings, those across the threshold, our angels, the dead that are with us, can only really see what's going on in the earthly plane through our souls. And so when we offer up through our imaginative cognition, which is what we're going to be talking about too in this call, when we offer up imaginations consciously, where we're forming pictures in our soul and allowing them to live and being able to listen to the events of our time in such a way that they can really speak through us and come to a new expression through us, that through our inner activity, that then it begins to form something in this tableau that we call the Akashic Records, because everything that we do has leaves an impression there that we can then go back and retrieve if we're initiated or when we cross the threshold at death.
Well, just taking in these kinds of imaginations where you would pick up that actual lecture cycle itself on Rosicrucianism and modern initiation and take the thought content into one's own meditation. That, in turn, can build a bridge for one doing that every night when they go to sleep at night. Carry it into the spiritual world, because it can return in the morning in the dream state, in dreams. And this relates to the verse we shared about the being awake, the coming awake. And it's important, too, to share a little bit about what was going on in this time period. Think of it, you guys. This was the centuries, 12th century, 13th century, or 13th, 14th, 15th, previous to when science would come into being, natural science, which would change everything. And here's this small group of individuals, maybe, let's say, seven of them, gathering together at different times. But I wanted to share something right out of the lecture so you can get a mood of the way Rudolf Steiner was speaking. Because something significant really occurred there that the Rosicrucians did. And it totally affects the entire process of Earth evolution. So he's saying here, and this is third or fourth lecture, he said, men stood before a kind of altar and said, we resolve to feel ourselves at this moment responsible, not for ourselves alone, nor for our community or our nation, nor even only for the human beings of our time. We resolve to feel ourselves responsible for all human beings who have ever lived on Earth. We resolve to feel ourselves belonging to the whole of humankind. And we feel that what has really happened with man, capital M, is that he has deserted the rank of the fourth hierarchy and has descended too deeply into matter. And in order that man may be able to return to the rank of the fourth hierarchy, may be able to find for himself his own free will, what in earlier times gods have tried to find for him and with him, let now the highest knowledge be offered up for a season. And a season is not like our season, like winter and then this next year. It's more of a like a time period. And that time period would have been from the 13th century up till the end, the last third of the 19th century. In fact, we could say up till about 1879. Because in 1879, the Archangel Michael would assume his rulership. And that would affect everything down on the earth, and we know the result of that, which is the body of knowledge given out to us through anthroposophy. So then he says here further, a little bit further, he says, and certain beings of the spiritual world who are not of humankind, who do not come to earth in human incarnation, accepted the sacrifice in order to fulfill therewith certain purposes in the spiritual world. He says, it would take us too far to speak of these here. He says, we will do so at another time. but thereby was the impulse for freedom made possible for humankind. This possibility was granted humanity by the spiritual world. So reading that, wow. It's like, you know, an esoteric event occurred, and here Rudolf Steiner is openly sharing with a group of people attending this lecture in January of 1924.
Yeah, I find it's interesting that he's doing this during the season of Epiphany, because Epiphany is also called the Three Kings Day. And so there's this, what Rudolf Steiner is doing is reading in a living, imaginative way through his ability to bring his consciousness into relationship with a living memory of the past. So he's describing these previous cultures in relationship to these kings that were representative of the previous cultures and giving their gifts to the Zarathustra, Jesus being on Epiphany. So and what I'm hearing you say is that it's important for us to be able to begin to pick up our threads of destiny from the past and from our past incarnations, so that we can have our bearings in the present. And that's what Rudolf Steiner was doing all the way through the Christmas conference, and now in a broader sense in humanity's at large's journey.
Yeah, and I think what opened up for him from the Christmas conference was this agreement, this nod of approval by the Archangel Michael, to continue further sharing these incredible intimate pictures with the Anthroposophists, which he did, not for very much longer. He only lived another or openly spoke another 9 months. So,
yeah, but look at all he did in that time. I mean, it's really amazing what he was able to bring forth, all the karmic lectures where he traced individuals from lifetime to lifetime, and the biodynamics course and the Christian community course and the medical courses, and I mean, almost every sphere of influence was... He was working, people say that he only slept about 40 minutes, that his light would go out for about 40 minutes. He was consulting individuals up until midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, and doing his own research and inner work, and then his light would go out for about 40 minutes, and then it would come back on again. And he was preparing for the next full day. Sometimes he would speak to four different groups of people in one day on different topics. So it's amazing what came out of him. And I'd just like to read a little something out of this is something that Rudolf Steiner wrote to Eliza von Moltke. And previous to this, he's talking about this ability to read in the Akasha record and to do these spiritual investigations, to be able to actually go back to the source of where something what was happening and be within the memory of it. And he says to her, "In matters like this, I am merely an instrument of higher beings whom I revere in complete humility. Nothing is my merit. Nothing is dependent on me. The only thing I can claim for myself is the strict training I have undergone, which protects me from any fantasy or illusion. This has been my first rule. What I experience spiritually is therefore free from any ordinary imagination, deception, or superstition. So I just love that he's really saying it's, he asks a question, from what I understand, he describes in the karmic relationships, and then he listens, he's silent, and he listens, and he's able to listen in such a way that he receives a very clear answer. And it's a different kind of a perception and memory that he's tapping into, that he researches through. It's very, very fascinating.
Yeah, that was beautiful. So, Viviana, did you want to share a little bit about Judith Van Halle?
Well,
or are we through with this section or that topic?
Yeah, I think this might be a good segue if you're through, and maybe you can weave some more in with what we share about Judith, because I've just been reading her book on dementia, Anthroposophical Perspectives, and I'm really so humbled by her and her work, and I know she's a bit of a controversial figure in the anthroposophical movement. And for those of you who may not know who she is, because it's been a little bit hush-hush about her in some ways, that she was born in a Jewish family, so she's Jewish from my understanding. She learned the ancient Hebrew language growing up, and some of the ancient mysteries of the Kabbalah and such. And then she became an architect. She went to school for some time in the United States, and she was an architect, and she came across Rudolf Steiner's work and took it up very intensively and was so confirmed by many of her inner experiences, because for her, this living memory tableau was available to her from a very young age. She was able to see the past at the time that Jesus Christ walked the earth from a young child. She had these memories of experiences, and they weren't her personal memory, but it was a memory of a living experience. And then she, through her studies of anthroposophy, she began to really understand her experiences, and she brought spiritual science to the experiences that she had, that she was having, and she began to really understand, and her perception just opened up dramatically after her encounter with Rudolf Steiner's work, and her love for Rudolf Steiner is very palpable in her writing and her respect for him. And then she, at one point, not that long ago, I think it was 2005, Elia, is that right? Or 2006, 2007, something like that. She actually, on Good Friday, she had the stigmata appeared, because every Easter she would remember. She said it was really important to remember this path of the cross and follow Christ through that, not just the resurrection, but to descend into the depths, and so that the resurrection could be fully embodied, and that we have an embodied resurrection. And she actually became to bear this what's called the stigmata or the wounds of Christ, and she would start. She bled. She bleeds every Friday. Is it every Good Friday or every day, Eliah?
It's every day, but it's very intense on Good Friday, and it was in her 33rd year.
Oh, 33rd.
On that Easter on Good Friday that the stigmata appeared. And so she bleeds from her hands and in her feet, probably her side.
And she's very athletic. She's very vigorous woman and very youthful in appearance. And it wasn't something that she really intended for herself, but it was something that came to her. And so she bears that and she shared it openly with a group of anthroposophists, and there are anthroposophists that I've known who have met with her and have said that they felt that she really saw them, and in just one meeting was able to make so much sense of their lives, things that had been enigmas to them or health challenges or whatever the case is, that Judith was able to really bring her imaginative cognition and understanding of who it was that was standing before her to a new level of understanding for that person. She was able to allow her inspiration to be a catalyst for that person's life. And other people have said that, you know, that the love is really palpable. So what I'd just like to say is that she has written this book on dementia, and it's fascinating. I mean, that was just a little bit of background to understand who this person is who's speaking this way, but she's talking about the importance of this living remembrance as something for us right now, because it's something that's occurring now, which Steiner also talked about, that all of humanity is crossing the threshold. New Year's Eve, we heard about the right entry into the spiritual world. And so we can cross the threshold consciously, or we're going to cross it unconsciously. And then what's going to happen is, even though we're crossing the threshold in our sleep and we're meeting the guardian of the threshold, when we come back, we are not able to come into our bodies properly, and we're not able to take hold of them properly. And Judith said that this is the cause of dementia, when our bodies get so filled up with the ordinary thinking that is brain-bound in such a way that our etheric body gets all filled up with these hardened memories, and they're not alive in the same way that I myself personally have had a near-death experience, and I've been able to experience the tableau, the life tableau, the Akashic record in reviewing my life. And I can tell you that these imaginations are very different, and I wish I could say that I could still cross the threshold at will and enter that state. I'm still working on that to bring coherence between my waking day state and that state. But what Judith said is that it's so important for us to nurture these capacities, because what's happening with the older generation of us baby boomers, who many of us were not breastfed, which has its own impact on the body and the whole development and the whole life of our health for the rest of our life. But also we were born at a time before the 60s, you know, where there was World War II, and the thinking, the material, the materialization of our thinking in our school systems, if we weren't hadn't gone to a Waldorf education was such that we weren't taught to think imaginatively. We weren't given these capacities, or those capacities weren't nurtured. So it's important for us to take them up ourselves now, because if we don't, what we face is the possibility that we lose our ability to take hold of our bodies with our I-being, and our body gets hardened, and our brain actually gets hardened and can't think imaginatively. So I just found some of what she's saying really fascinating, and I really appreciate what she has to share this way. And she says in here,
but here with that little pause, we should also really share that Judith also, when the stigmata appeared, stopped eating food,
right,
whole foods. And obviously there's a heightened capacity to take what streams in from the eyes and the ears, you know, through sound and through light, and have it nourish the body, which is, I find, incredible.
Right. Yeah, I still remember when her books came out, and then the biochemist from at the same year, the same time, through Anthroposophic Press or Steiner Books, Judith's book, first book, was published, and then there was a book that was published by the Michael Warner, is his name, Life from Light, and he just evolved beyond the point of he's the head of the cancer research department at the Arlsheim Ida Wegmann Clinic, I think it is, or whatever clinic there is there in Arlsheim, Switzerland. He is an amazing researcher and individual, and he just chose to shift consciousness and not eat food anymore. He says anyone can do it. I don't know if that's true or not, but I believe that he did it. And Judith is a whole different situation. She loved to eat. She said it wasn't something that she chose to do. He chose to do it. He does not have the stigmata. She does. But he's made a shift and is able to nurture himself from the spiritual presence of the word or the light. I mean, the light, the life that lives in the light. And he said many of his physical ailments have left him, and he's so happy. He gets up and dances every morning at 5 o'clock, and with joy for the day, and has energy. He goes out and plays tennis, and he's not de-energized. He's gone through medical clinics and being locked up in a hospital, and so there's a shift that's coming that some people on the planet are paving the way. And I'd like to bring this back to our last conversation too, this phenomena that Judith bears with the stigmata, because Steiner talks about it quite a bit in a number of his lecture cycles, about the stigmata really being an expression that person is embodying the astral body of the Nathan Jesus, that there were copies that were made at the resurrection of the etheric body, of the astral body, and of the ego. And he talked about St. Francis of Assisi having the astral body of the Nathan Jesus, and St. Francis of Assisi had the stigmata at the, you know, when he was alive and did the work that he did. Steiner also talked about Thomas Aquinas, of having a copy of the astral body. I don't know that Thomas Aquinas had the stigmata. I don't believe he did. Did he, Elijah?
No, not that I know of.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is a process where you can inwardly have the stigmata and not outwardly. But what I liked what you shared is when the stigmata appear, it's because you are now given from the spiritual world a copy of the astral body of the Nathan Jesus, a replica of that astral body. And in it is the, you know, imagine if you could experience it or imagine it spiritually, it would be a center of light with spiritual darkness in the palm of your hands.
Yeah.
So these are incredible mysteries, and what I feel is that this was such a gift to the Anthroposophical Society because look at these factors. The woman's an anthroposophist. She's a woman, and she's Jewish, and she's stigmated. Oh, my God. It's like, do you want a sign from the spiritual world? Well, there it is, and she's alive today. But, dear, could you say more about the dangers that Judith has shared with us about this overwhelming experience we're all having with this deluge of abstract ideas and this whole element of what's going on in the electronic world where, you know, you've got Facebooks everywhere being held, millions on Facebook every day, and the effect that it's having if they don't create a space where they can bring in spiritual imaginations.
Yeah. She says that living remembering is a gift of this present Michael age, and which human beings begin to develop spiritual organs for the visioning of the Christ being in etheric form, which Steiner said would begin to happen and begin to occur in people after 1933 and beyond. And we know the incredible challenges that humanity continues to face and still faces. And so she says that now, during sleep, a large part of humanity perceives the appearance of the etheric Christ, but in the waking state, this still seldom occurs. So sleep we all do, and there's something that we all perceive as a living remembrance and a conscious looking inward, but we're not able to really bring it across the threshold yet. And she says anthroposophy is a gift to humanity to begin to do that through Rudolf Steiner's many lectures and through what she's sharing too. Her work is very spiritually scientific. She brings a spiritual scientific orientation to her visions that she has and her ability to access this. And she says that it's, Eli, you talked about Michael in 1879, the Archangel Michael, and I know you're referring to this battle in heaven that we've talked about before where the being is cast down to the earth, the dragon is cast down to the earth, which Rudolf Steiner calls Ahriman. And so what we are battling with now is Ahrimanic beings on the earth and in our souls and in our thoughts. And what Judith says is that this process, this this increasing lack of orientation in respect to our bodies and the environment in dementia is the lack of orientation about the differences between the concepts of space and time in the sensory and spiritual worlds, and also about the difference between dead remembering of our stored sense perceptions and without the eye's guidance. A lot of people don't even know what their eye being is and how to awaken within it, which Steiner went to great pains to elaborate in his philosophy of spiritual activity. But she said this process, going to sleep or not able with the eye to begin to perceive the previous incarnation is Ahriman's great plan, or even that of even higher darker powers, to prevent the human being from envisioning the Christ being in the etheric world that surrounds and permeates our sense world, and to utilize this envisioning as a foundation for spiritual and physical development. She says it's an anti-Christian struggle against humanity's general awakening to living remembrance. In this way, Ahriman tries with every means to take away a human being's conscious control of his remembering process. He uses our comfortable materialistic thinking for this. And so that's the case of so many people today, and even people that, I mean, I'm just really troubled by this, and it's scary, you know, because she is saying that it's really an epidemic, and without people having eye beings, those of us baby boomers that are going to be growing old together, you know, there's going to be a lot of us, a lot more than the caretakers that are available, that are having this problem. So it's something that I just found very awakening and just really got my attention as something that needs to be nurtured and cared for. And I think that this time right now, it's really love. It's really when the heart begins to have thoughts and our eye being finds its fully embodied presence in the body and is able to listen to that heart consciousness, which I believe we have sensory nerves in our brain, in our heart, and in our abdomen, in our gut area, but the heart has all three in it, which is very different than the brain or the gut, and it's sort of the mediator between this unconscious threshold experience that we have in our conscious waking day life. And that's something that, an example maybe of something that we can do with that is, I think it's important to, when we see things going on in the environment, Steiner talked about this in developing the heart capacities, that we see through to the positive outcome that can be there, even if it's something that we are disturbed by, because we can get so overwhelmed if we take things at their face value and not take it the next level and really begin to meet the world and everything that we encounter with holding the possibility for something greater to come out of it. And I mean, I do that every day, just as an example. I go for my walks every day, and I oftentimes see this crisscrossing across the sky of these white chemtrails making straight lines, almost like a tic-tac-toe across the sky, until the whole sky is filled up with white. And people are speculating that there's heavy metals in those chemtrails, and that it's a weather experiment to really manipulate the weather. Now, one could look at that and be fearful about it or be troubled by it or you know, condemn whatever's going on. Or what I try to do, and in my own simple way, is I inwardly just do a Eurythmy-L, and sometimes I even do it physically, and just really bringing this cleansing from the earth up through my body, up through to the sun, and just clearing the space inwardly and really sharing inwardly what's going on with the gods, knowing that there are beings on the other side of the threshold that I'm connected with that can hear my imagination, see my imagination of what I'm perceiving there, and I ask that it be brought to light, that I ask that it be revealed, that I ask that we do find out what's been going on in that area. And there's so many examples like that. I mean, the whole banking system and the agricultural system and the genetic engineering, it can get very overwhelming. And I think if we trust, if we have this trust that there is a greater power, there is a wisdom to the universe, and there are people like Judith on the earth right now with us, giving us cues to help us along. And we have Rudolf Steiner, who hasn't died. I mean, he died, he crossed the threshold, but he hasn't left us. If we really believe that, then we can begin to hold one another and hold each other through these calls, even in a community sense, and begin to know that we're connected and we're connected with each other. And we can, through this impulse of the Christmas conference, I believe, come to a new imagination of what Elia likes to call a culture of initiation, where the principles of initiation really become the principles of a culture. And if we can hold that possibility in our hearts and in our conversation, then I believe that we'll be able to meet the challenges and get through them. Sorry about that. My computer just made a little noise. Okay, so I would love to open the lines now, or the lines are already open, and I would love to hear, before we go any further, any kind of feedback from anybody. I muted one person's line. I'm going to unmute them now. Okay, so anybody who wants to talk, your lines are open. You just have to unmute your phone. And we'd love to hear if anything isn't clear, or if you have any objections to what's been said, or any other perspectives, or whatever. We'd love to have you join us in the conversation. So maybe Bibi, this might be a good time, after talking about Judith and imaginative cognition and the kinds of things that are possible with a shift in consciousness, maybe you could be willing to share a little bit about Saint Brigitte and her, what kinds of things she was able to do in her time. And we can bring her, the spirit of Saint Brigitte, into this conversation with us today.
Well, hello?
Yeah, hi.
Hey there. I will do my best to honor this apparently quite magnificent person. And yes, I do think she had quite a tremendous consciousness as a patron saint of Ireland, which we were fortunate to visit a few years back. And They apparently honor her along with St. Patrick and St. Columba. I will point out that it was Steiner. I wish I could tell you which book, but in reading Steiner, his appreciation, what I understood to be his appreciation of early Celtic Christianity, which led me to purchase several, they're very small, booklets by Ian MacDonald from Floris Books, F-L-O-R-I-S Books. And I did pick up one on Saint Bride or Brigid, and it's spelled B-R-I-G-I-D or B-R-I-G-I-T, apparently all wrapped up into the same being. So I wanted to point that out, and of course there's a lot of information online, and there is Catholic references as well. And just to quickly point out on that, there's a more there's a current writer by the name of Thomas Cahill, C-A-H-I-L, who I heard on NPR. But prior to that, while we were at Newgrange in Ireland, I purchased a book by him which talked about the influence of the early Irish saints, monks, as they were really the ones who, without sword, spread Christianity. So I think there is quite a bit of consciousness out there, and hopefully I can represent it to some small extent here. I won't take too much time. On the back of the little booklet from Floris, it says that she was one of the most potent feminine symbols of the spirit of the Celtic Church of 5th and 6th centuries. Her dates are 451 to 525, and this is the feast day, as Vivienne noted, and is the day of her passing. That she was of noble birth, and accordingly her father was a lord and mother a bondswoman. But in her experiences, as Vivienne so correctly pointed out, at least to all of this, that she did multiple miracles. She was known for her simplicity, again, reading here from the booklet, and her closeness to the people, which earned her such devotion and reverence that a wealth of stories and legends became attached to her name. The most ancient text on the life of St. Bride, extracts from which are selected and presented in the little book, are a rich mixture of elements associated with a Christian saint and with a pre-Christian mother goddess of the same name. St. Bride, or Brigid, also watches over childbirth, brings prosperity and abundance, and increases the milk of cows and ewes. She is also associated with flame, eternal flames. They credit her with in some of the stories, as well as her healing capabilities, as well as her ability to send some judgment over to those that didn't make her too happy. But she did apparently create two monasteries in Kildare, one for men and one for women. And I'd like to just finish here, which I hope would be a bit of a sense of the consciousness. It's her Hearthkeeper Prayer, and this is on the site of saintbrigids.org. And so it's not too long. I'll try to just wrap it up with this. Brigid of the Mantle, encompass us. Lady of the Lambs, protect us. Keeper of the Heart, kindle us. beneath your mantle, gather us and restore us to memory. Mothers of our mother, foremothers strong, guide our hands in yours. Remind us how to kindle the hearth, to keep it bright, to preserve the flame. Your hands upon ours, our hands within yours, to kindle the light both day and night. The mantle of Brigitte about us, the memory of Brigitte keeping us from harm, from ignorance, from heartlessness, this day and night, from dawn till dark, from dark till dawn.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Well, think of that. Yeah, thank you, Bibi. And think of that. Just imagine you're back where Brigitte crossed the threshold. She enters the moon sphere. And now she shares her inner life with the angelic realm. And then she goes from the moon sphere to the sphere of Mercury, and she shares her life with the archangel eye. And then she enters the sphere of Venus, and she shares her inner life with the archive beings. And so wherever, you know, where she was in Kildare physically, that etheric space is saturated with her being. But thank you for sharing that. That was wonderful.
Thank you. My phone went off just as I finished the little poem. Thank you for what you said. Thank you so much.
I mean, it was perfect, really. I mean, that was beautiful, Bibi.
Well, I appreciated Steiner waking me up to her.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So if there's anything that anybody's holding back and you'd like to step forward and share, we'd like to hear from you.
Hello, this is Carol.
And hi, Carol.
Yes, hello. Thank you all for that rich, rich sharing. I just had the question, what does Judith Von Haley say more specifically about how we respond to what is going on in our time and the dementia and, you know, individually together? Does she give any strong statements, or is it pretty much describing the problem?
Well, she really talks about the I being, you know, our I consciousness, and how important it is to strengthen it. She said what happens with dementia is that the astral body takes over and there is no I being there in the body anymore. The I being is completely like unable to come into the body. And so she said for prevention and for even the care of someone who has lost their I being, it can be very difficult for the caretaker, because the caretaker has to be the eye not only for themselves but for the other. And she said it's very important for the caretaker and for us who are striving to prevent dementia to be awake in our eye being and to master our astral body. And so she said that, you know, in that case, because what can happen then if there is someone with a strong I being conscious of themselves as a spiritual being, you know, and not letting their emotions or their desires or whatever that would run amok in the astral body to kind of take over, where they get angry or frustrated or starts, you know, because the person with dementia can often sometimes be cruel and mean. They don't mean to, obviously, but it's just untended forces from the lifetime that are just, you know, having free reign. And so she said it's really important to keep speaking to the I-being, even though it's not in the body, to address it and to keep bringing the person back to their body. Like she said, even architecturally, these lectures came out of a conference where she was asked to speak to a care center that she designed. She was even, I believe, the architect for the building, because they wanted to be able to design it in such a way that it would help bring the people back to themselves. And she said, you can do that through architecture, through the form, and it's actually like a spiraling in form. I'm guessing you can do it through eurythmy, and I'm guessing you can do it through, like, I even think that some of the communication forms that we have now, like that Steiner talked about in Knowledge of Higher Worlds, of the Eightfold Path and the Six Basic Exercises, they're very strengthening for the I-being. And Marsha Rosenberg, who really developed nonviolent communication, I believe his process develops the I-being. I believe associative economics develops the I-being, and you know, so there's so many things, there's so many different, I mean, there's a number of ways, but it's really taking hold of the physical, continuing to take hold of the physical and to not get caught in it, and disappear our egos. Our egos get caught up in this material process and gets confused that we are our bodies and we aren't I beings anymore, and that's where the problem comes in. And so I'm not sure that I'm answering your question, as I'm doing as best I can in the short amount of time that we have. I'm guessing we could go in a lot deeper with any one of those subjects, and I can think of a lot of other things to say, but I think that may give you the general idea.
Oh, that was very helpful. Thank you.
And, you know, I also think it's a lot has to do with the food being denatured and the vaccines that everybody's getting every flu season, and, you know, the young people, and we were brought up with vaccines too, but the young children that are coming in today, and Judith talks about this too, that it's really a crime against humanity for these young babies to be injected with so many illnesses that they really don't have a karmic relationship to, and they're forced to come into their body too early to fight this whatever they're injected with off. And then what happens is maybe nothing's noticed right away. Some children do have very difficult times. Some children contract the diseases. Some children get autism from the mercury in the vaccinations and the other things that are in there that aren't. What happens is it causes that premature entering into the body, then causes a hardening in the etheric body later in life, which is what Judith says causes the dementia. So it's not only just the education that we've had, but these, you know, the vaccinations, the food, the quality of food. It's so many things that Steiner really tried to give alternatives for and give antidotes for to be aware of, because it's hard to really address it in general, because you'd have to look at every individual's particular constitution and then their biography and what they've had to come through. And as we said in the beginning of this call, I mean, I just feel that this call has a certain tragic tone to it as well as a hopeful tone, and I believe that's really the season of Epiphany, that there's that which we have to still transform in the culture around us and in ourselves, and we can see the impact and the effects of not doing so. And so I guess is how much can we really ensoul it, and how much can we really just be aware? Because I think just being aware of the problems and being aware of the issues and having the vulnerability to ask for help and to know that that we can see it through to other possibility is just important, to keep having the faith and keep having the trust and keep having the love and not letting the all of what we're having to encounter today get the better of us.
Yes, I understand completely. I can identify with all of that very much. You want to be able to be aware, and I've been just in this season too, getting more and more aware of the depth of these really huge challenges. You know, evil is what is the question of our time, I guess, and I've just been more aware of that. But then it's very necessary to then go deeper into who we really are, because it is very easy to be very, just depressed and overwhelmed.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
This is Victoria Shahidi from Michigan.
Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to mention something about what you just talked about and the other woman who just left the phone talked about, as far as that you talked about the tragic part and yet the hopeful part, and how you can become depressed and overwhelmed. And In viewing that, I look at we have to work in our will forces more.
Mm-hmm. Are you still there? Oh, I think she got dropped off the... I think what happened is she got disconnected somehow.
Get her back. She must have something important to say.
I know. I know, because I see that... I think she has to dial back in. Oh, that's too bad.
Was that Sonia? Or a different lady?
No, it was somebody who called in after we started the call, and I'm not remembering her name right now at the moment. I had my volume down too low, and I couldn't hear what she was saying when she first started.
Her name was Victoria from
Victoria?
Michigan.
Victoria?
Oh, Victoria, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she's been on the calls before.
All right, so...
Victoria Shahad, I think. Shahadi, something like that.
Oh, there she is. She's back. Victoria, are you back with us?
Yes, I'm sorry. I don't know how I just got blanked out.
I saw that. I don't know what happened either. Are you on a cell phone?
Yes.
Maybe it just, I don't know. Okay, go ahead.
Well,
you were.
What I wanted to address is what I'm finding in my own circle of people or friends is that, you know, so we recognize these things, and we talk about them, but then we stop there. And so I am looking at where we have to make a further step in our will forces For example, we're dealing with flint and lead right now, and what's going on there, and it's become a big issue. Or, I mean, there's so many of them that you could go on. But
right.
So what can I do as, you know, just an everyday person? I feel that by writing a letter, calling a congressman, and speaking from my intellect and heart and saying how I felt the situation was handled, or speaking to someone from what I have read and the different sources and applied them and saying, you know, how could this happen? And I think something needs to be done, and I want it further investigated. And when they don't hear from us, when we just take it into our consciousness and let it sit there and bubble, but we don't take it anywhere else back out into our society, I feel that those that are acting on the other side of it just go, oh, look, they're so, you know, asleep that we can just keep doing what we want.
Mm.
And I mean, and it's how else do we act? Sooner or later, we're going to have to, you know, decide to act on our truth and what we believe in. We have to get off the fence and do something. If we don't like GMOs, we have to go out and go to one of those marches. You know, if we have, I know also recently this, the newest thing is this HIV, or no, this Gardasil HVP.
Mm-hmm.
When that came about, when I first learned about that, I was frankly, because my daughter was of that age, I was completely in fear that the government was going to force it. And fortunately, it didn't happen that way, but they left it up to, you know, physicians recommending it. And my daughter's girlfriends, mothers, listened to their doctors, and they said, well, I think your daughter should get this. And they were people I knew that were in, you know, at school. I mean, just in the school line. Not personal friends, but they went and got their child vaccinated, and I couldn't understand that wouldn't you read something about it rather than just take somebody who says, I think you should get your daughter vaccinated, without even questioning why, what for. And now the repercussions, all these girls are really suffering, I mean, from unbelievable side effects of it.
Yeah.
And again, if there's, you know, physicians that are speaking out against it, and there's an area I think that we have to support them. You know, we have to write them and tell them, or if they leave you an email. And so it's work, you know, to sit down and do those things. But I find that it counters that overwhelming and the depressing feeling, because at least I feel like I have attempted, or I've made an effort, even if I don't know how far it goes into effect. But I was told one time by a politician that one letter equals 300 people.
Uh-huh,
but that was quite a while ago. So I'm sure that has changed. In 2016, I was younger when I was told that. So I know a lot has changed. But I just wanted to add that. I feel that we, you know, we need to move into those will forces and do something with them. It doesn't have to be just a suggestion of a phone call or a letter. There's other creative ways that this group that's listening can share and tell me that they've done and go beyond that.
Thank you. That was really well said. And I've just been reading this book also called The Art of Respectful Confrontation. And that's really what you're saying, is to marshal these Mars forces that we have in our speaking, in our willing, and be willing to stand for what's true for us, and to be willing to confront where we have a karma, where it's our destiny to be able to do so, where we can have an influence to be able to take that next step and let people know how we feel or what we think, and make some requests about what could be different. And I really appreciate you bringing that, Victoria. That's important to bring into consideration. And I know Steiner talked about, you know, not agitating politically. He tried as best he could to work into the political system with his threefold principles back in the 1900, before 1920, and then after 1920, he said things would have to be different now, and it wouldn't be, we couldn't make headway that way anymore. I don't, you know, like, I hear what you're saying about it, but we also, like, I think the action needs to take place in doing things that counteract these things. Because my friend Peter Jensen, for example, up in Vermont, he said that when he applies the biodynamic preparations to his land, that the chemtrails above his farm disappear. And he can see them all around, but they disappear above his farm. And so he's doing it with the biodynamic preparations and getting groups of people together to go inoculate as many people's farms as want to be inoculated with the biodynamic preparations. So there's different ways for different folks, and I think you're right. I mean, just being awake and to see how we can engage our wills to be able to meet some of this stuff is going to help all of us. And I'm with you on these vaccine perils for these young girls. My granddaughter got a vaccination, and I just know that, I don't know if it's completely the age, but she's gone through an incredible change, and I don't know quite what it is, but it was very disturbing to me to hear, because I had talks with her mom, and she promised me that was not going to happen, and I found out that she was got so much pressure from the school system or the doctor or whatever, that the mom just succumbed to the pressure for my granddaughter to get vaccinated. So it's challenging. But thank you for that. Anybody else have anything to share about that, or how your year has started out this year? Which we didn't ever touch on, but I want to just leave the lines open to hear more voices. It really helps the call come alive. Marushka, are you still with us?
Yeah, I am here. I'm hearing you.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. I hear everything that you say. I am always, as I am included in this dementia consciousness, I feel that I'm always impressed that human beings with all the potential of being able to see and to hear the other realms of reality, they're still stuck in the human patterns, and I see so many that cannot get out of their human patterns. I am myself, and as I said, in this dementia consciousness, hoping that I can get out of this inability to come to my body. And but that's the separation of the of what humanity goes through. And on my side, I hope that this, in some level, will support the in a global level the situation, what is happening in the planet Earth. I believe that everybody has a mission here to fulfill on the planet Earth, and I pray that all the human beings at a certain point will be able to deal with their own patterns and deal with ethics and respect towards one another, especially respect and ethics, as that goes, in my opinion, before any kind of love that exists in the human heart. But I'm very grateful to both of you since I have met you both. I'm learning, I'm a student of life, and I'm learning and always ready to know about new things that comes my way, and to the point that I can see as everybody else can, and then continue with my spiritual ambition and keeping my humility, that I think it's one of the most important things in life, to be humble and to drain, not to be drained by negativity, but keep yourself humble in all situations. This dementia is actually feeded by anger and depression and all negative feelings of the human heart. When I believe the fear is going to be gone, then the anger is going to be gone, and the ego will be together with the I consciousness. I'm learning, and I'm very grateful that I'm in this call and that I have met both of you, that for quite a long time I haven't talked to you or seen you at all. But after such a long time, I hear your voices. It's like light in the call, hearing the other people talking about different issues or same issues or issues that are connected to them. Gives us the opportunity to increase the knowledge and get out of the dementia that is deep inside of the human consciousness, unfortunately. Be great beings that can see and feel and have light inside of them, but they are stuck in the patterns. I myself cannot understand that. I'm still in the dementia myself, but there are the others that are not in the dementia. They can see and they can hear, but they're still stuck in their patterns. That this is such a misery. I hope that one day humankind will get out of this consciousness of dementia and start breaking with their own patterns and live life in purity and kindness and beauty and respect, and especially in respect, because there is a human heart that has to praise the self-love. That's one of the most important things, is to love yourself, to not allow yourself to be abused or damaged or mistreated by anyone, especially when you cannot defend yourself, or that's actually the ego that needs to defend, because the ego is attacked all the time. So that you cannot, you don't have the power as everybody else does. When you have the power of everybody else, nobody's gonna do that with you. But when you don't have, then you are on the top of the list. And so you have to keep moving forward with the hope that the most high God that created these beings that you just mentioned, with the stigmata. I even have from the Catholic Church one of the saints called Santo Pio, of Pietrelcina Cappuccino, that he comes from Italy, and he is rooted in the knowledge of Jesus Christ, and he has stigmata in the two hands, and he died already, but it's...
Are you talking about Padre Pio?
Huh?
Padre Pio?
Saint Pio. Saint Pio. He was born in 1887 in Pietrelcina in Italy, southern Italy. And he also had the stigmata in his two hands. So they were like beings, I believe, that came here to fulfill a mission so that they could change the energy of the human darkness. Always learning, always being ready to embrace new knowledge and moving forward, but to a better level, to a higher level. Thank you so much for everything that you give to all of us.
Thank you, Mariska. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you, Marushka. Bless your heart.
Thank you, Elaya.
Well, dear, we probably should close because we're up near past, I think, 9 o'clock. And
oh, gosh, we are. Okay, that time went fast.
Yeah.
All right. I just want to mention one thing, just in regards to research for your own soul. We've had planetary aspects going on for the last few years, actually Uranus, Pluto squaring one another, which for me is an imagination of the new revolution that's coming, a whole new revolution in way of thinking and being, squaring Pluto, which is the god of the underworld that typically is portrayed as, and this has been happening. The last exact square happened last March, and it's in Capricorn. I know this because Pluto is sitting right on my Mercury and my Sun right now, which are conjunct in Capricorn, right where Pluto is. And Mercury in January, right after our last call on January 5th, Mercury went retrograde, and that just means it looks like it's going backward in our sky. But what happened is it crossed back over. Pluto. It conjuncted Pluto just after it. But when it was going forward, it conjunct Pluto, and then it squared Uranus, and then it went backward and it conjunct Pluto and squares Uranus, and then the 14th, the Sun and Mercury are conjunct, and then the 20th, Mercury squared Uranus, the second of three times in January, and then it conjuncts Pluto. So it's just like going back and forth, and after it goes direct again, it conjuncts Pluto and squares Uranus again, Mercury does. So it's bringing up this memory of this aspect, and I believe, for me anyway, it's asking us to delve deeper, to get deeper into ourselves, to really find the will forces, as Victoria was mentioning, of what it is that we are asked to be doing right now to transform ourselves, to take over, to take our own doubles on and the double of humanity on at this time. So I just wanted to share that real briefly. I could have said a lot more, but I'm just gonna leave it at that. So that the last one was yesterday, Mercury squared Uranus for the third and final time now before moving on. So if you've noticed that you've had more challenges than usual these last 5 weeks, or I guess it hasn't been that long, 4 weeks or so, just hold it as a research question and be asked the question, you know, what is being asked of me here? What is coming up for me? How can I meet this differently? What is really available as resources to come at this from a whole different perspective? Because I think all of that is there. And so I'd just like to close tonight with a thought from the I got a Christian community homily yesterday, and there was a story about this man who was by the pool of Bethesda, who was waiting for the angel to come down and move the water, and he had been staying by that pool for 38 years. He couldn't walk. He was lame. And his will forces were crippled, and Christ Jesus comes to the pool and asks the man, do you want or do you have the will, you could say, to become healed, to be well? And the man says that, well, yes. He says, but I need help. Every time the water begins to move, I need help to get into the water, and somebody always goes down before me. And Christ Jesus says, you know, take up your pallet and walk, basically. So he is able to pick up his pallet and walk, and that is on the Sabbath day. It's on the Sunday. That was not allowed to be. You couldn't even carry your pallet on a Sunday, so the Pharisees told him, you know, that he shouldn't be doing that on a Sunday. And he said, well, the man who just healed me told me to. And they asked who he was, and there was this encounter. And it was at that point that they decided to kill Christ Jesus, because he was doing this on a Sunday. So what the priest said was that this really is a picture that there was these abundant spiritual forces in earlier human times, like Elijah was alluding to, and then it dwindled down to where there was only one angel that came, and only one person could get healed in this pool. And now the Christ being heals with his word. With his spoken word, he says something to the man, and the man is able to get up and walk. And it's through the word, through our speaking and doing it at a deeper level with one another, that this etheric Christ can work through each of us in its own way. And so I'd just like to close with reading from Paul, which was also in the email I got yesterday. He says, all around us, creation waits with great longing that the sons and daughters of God shall begin to shine forth in humankind. Creation itself, and therefore everything in it, is full of longing for the future. And it is now we who are to give life to the earth, we who are to heal its wounds, we who are to redeem the damage we have done. So thank you, everyone, for joining us and sharing thoughts and these imaginations.
This is Sonia, and I would like to thank you both for doing the work that it takes to bring this to us and to share.
Well, thank you, Sonia.
Yeah, thank you, Sonia. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening and carrying the thoughts with us.
And this
so we'll have another call a month from now. I guess that's our new schedule. And hopefully you won't forget about us in a month. We won't forget about you.
Okay, I'll be there.
Looks like that'll be March 7th, Monday, March 7th, but we'll send out an email reminder.
Is this the first and third Monday?
Actually, we change it. It's just going to be the first Monday of every month now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you so much to both of you.
You're welcome, Mariska. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for being on the call. And thank you, everyone else, for coming. So good night.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Night.